Hello, Marvelites! You are listening to This Week in Marvel, episode number 480. I'm Ryan Panagos, a.k.a. Agent M.
I'm Lorraine Sink, a.k.a. Agent L.
And this is Jace Moe-Eichelhardt, a.k.a. JMI.
Yeah! Happy New Year, everybody! Yeah.
Happy New Year, yo!
We're out of 2020, we're into 2021, we have lived!
And everything's exactly the same. No!
I was about to say, everything's changed. The world is new. Wait, what? It's not? Damn it.
The tick of midnight did not necessarily fix the world. But hey, onward and upward. We're on our way, babies.
Straight up, man.
Real talk. Up. Did either of you stay up to midnight?
Yes.
On New Year's Eve? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I've got the excuse.
You have a kid. You have a baby. That's the difference.
I say tiny baby. She's like 15 months now, and
still
she's all
a tornado
grown up.
of love and nightmares, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Boy. No, I really did. When the clock hit midnight, I took the biggest sigh of relief. Like, oh man, maybe we'll be okay.
I sure hope so. I like that positivity, Lorraine. It's real good. For everybody just joining us here on This Week in Marvel, we're going to tell you all about what's happening this week in Marvel, from games, comics, movies, TV, what have you. You know, it's the beginning of the year. Everybody's getting back to work, so there's not been a lot of, like, newsy news, but there's some cool stuff for us to update you with. And one thing we want to start off with is a video that Lorraine and I were on.
Yeah. On Earth's Mightiest Show, we did a special episode about everything coming to Marvel in 2021. You should go check that out on Marvel.com or the Marvel YouTube channel to just really get the full lay of the land. And of course, listen to last week's episode of This Week in Marvel if you skipped it or you missed it, because there is a whole bunch of info there as well. We go through a lot of the same stuff. And let me tell you, it is a long list of stuff that's coming in 2021. And that's just the stuff we can talk about right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Did you guys watch Soul on Disney Plus over the holiday?
Did. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Did you catch the Easter egg in it?
I didn't notice. Please tell me, what's going on?
So I remember seeing it and it blipping by so quickly that I didn't think, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then, like, later I saw people talking about it. I was like, oh, yeah. So around the 29-minute mark in the movie Soul, you see a bunch of important mentors that go by. You know, there's that character 22 that's like the rogue soul. Sorry, light spoilers. But one of the mentors' names is there, and it's Jack Kirby.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
That's dope.
So go 29 minutes in, watch the movie. Just watch the whole dang movie because it's so cute.
It is.
Like,
it's very good.
So sweet.
Oh, so great. Really fantastic. Yeah,
That was our Christmas night. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Aww.
Yeah, it was terrific. Definitely highly encouraged. But Jack Kirby, if anybody doesn't know, is one of the architects of everything Marvel. He, you know, helped create pretty much everything you love for Marvel, or the basis of everything that you love. So, you know, from having a hand in Spider-Man to helping create the Avengers to creating Captain America and so much more. Jack is the king. And that was really, really cool that they put that little Easter egg in Soul. I like that.
Isn't there a quick, like, story about the fact that when Jack drew, he's the one that kind of drew, he didn't create, but kind of really brought to light motion in comic books. So like when Thor's hammer goes around, like he's the one that created that style where like you can act, it actually looks like Thor's hammer is moving because of the lines he drew around the hammer and the way he drew it. Like it kind of came to life that way. I heard a couple artists talk about, like, before that the comics were kind of stagnant, but like when Jack came in, he made this movement so everything looked like it was action packed. So like you just had to read his stuff because it looked like it was moving.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, electricity and like space and the cosmos and like giving the cosmos life in a big way was such an important part of Jack's work too. Really changed the game. The good old Kirby crackle.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The energy of life and everything. Oh, he's the best. There was a great Kirby biography released last year, which is wonderful. If you haven't checked it out already, go check it out. Let's talk a little bit about games, because in Marvel Contest of Champions next week, we're getting Jubilee. Jubilee, one of my favorite mutant characters. I think, I don't know, I guess for our generation, we have a love for Jubilee in part because of the 90s X-Men cartoon. But she's still so friggin' great.
I love her. Does a mall baby eat chili fries? You know?
The sunglasses, the yellow trench coat. I always saw it as leather, but yeah.
She adopted, in current comics, she adopted a little boy and is like an awesome mom. And when Shogo goes into like a special fairy world, it turns into a dragon. I mean, come on. It's the best.
Also, I love that Shogo is like, I want to be a dragon all the time. And I don't want to go back to being a baby because babies like are toddling and having a hard time. But I could just be a dragon and flip and fly.
Yeah. That's life. Cool. Lorraine, we have a mutual friend. Her name is Preeti Chibber, and she's been doing some work for Marvel, doing some writing on some great middle grade books. And we now know that there's another one coming out in April. What's the deal with Marvel's Avengers Assembly, the Sinister Substitute?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so first of all, her first book in this line of books, Marvel's Avengers Assembly Orientation, just came out within the last few weeks. And so it's really cool that they've already announced a sequel. If you have not yet read the first book, go read the first book. It's so cute. It's got wonderful, really adorable art by James Lancet. And it's basically, kind of like a mix between a comic book. It's heavily illustrated, but it's definitely also a book. It's great for kids, and it's also just like a really funny read for adults. I had a great time reading through it. So The Sinister Substitute is going to be the next book in this series, and it's going to be a whole new semester for them. And you're going to get Captain Marvel announcing that she's adding staff to the school, and then there's going to be intrigue, and it's, as you might guess, it's going to be around a sinister substitute. So anyways, Preeti is just one of the most charming, funny human beings to talk to, but also that all translates to her writing. So if you just want to read something really fun, or if you've read Spider-Man Far From Home, Peter and Ned's Ultimate Travel Journal that came out around Far From Home, oh man, you'll love this. They're all so cute. You can listen to her. She was on the show April 17th, of this past year of 2020. So if you want to go listen to that episode of This Week of Marvel and check her out, you should, because she's flipping awesome.
Yeah. And she also was on Women of Marvel in October of 2020, talking about the first book in this series. And I'm sure, you know, she's just going to keep knocking them out. She's pretty prolific as a fun middle grade writer right now, which is awesome. Yay, Preeti. Speaking of prolific people, our very own Lorraine Sink does a whole lot of work. And
yes,
Lorraine,
she does.
One of your shows is an exclusive to SiriusXM. It's called Marvel's Declassified. What is the show and what's episode 3 all about?
Well, the show is all about declassifying all of Marvel's secrets. We're looking back at Marvel stories and how they came into being with the people that were there, and really getting into some stuff that we've never really talked about as a company, which has been really, really fun. And one of the things that we're talking about in our next episode that came out this past Tuesday is all about war stories. And so, you know, we know in 1939, Marvel Comics launched, and then World War II hit just a few years later, and it really changed the industry in some really huge ways. There were writers and artists that were inspired by that story. There was also participation by the government that made comics become wildly popular. It's such a strange story. We also get into the creation of Captain America and the bolstering of that comic and the strange dissent from other people of the time. So anyways, it's a really crazy, wild story. We also get into the evolution of Vietnam as a war and how that affected comics like The Nom in future days. This is one of my favorite episodes of the series. It's a truly wild ride that is just going to keep you guessing. And in fact, I have a clip for you guys. This is with comic book historian Paul Hirsch, who I just had the most phenomenal time talking to. And he studied propaganda that appeared in comic books in World War II.
I was looking through photographs because that's the easiest place to start. And I would be looking at World War II era stuff and realize, oh, that guy's in a submarine reading a comic book. This guy's in a bomber reading a comic book. Like, they're selling them on this base. And I realized there's way more to this than I thought. I came across one study that said during the war, at least according to the government's internal sources, that it believed 44% of the U.S. Army identified as regular comic book readers. So that's a huge number.
That was super cool. There's also what's interesting is how many Marvel creators and staffers are like served, were veterans, you know, like took time off from working at Marvel in some cases and then came back or had lengthy careers at Marvel after serving.
Yeah, it's a lot more common than people think. And in fact, we talked a lot about that with writer and editor Larry Hama, as well as The Nom as a series and what it was like working with so many veterans. In fact, I have a little clip of that as well.
The majority of the letters we got for The Nom were from kids who said, you know, I read the comic with my dad, who was a Vietnam vet, and this opened up a whole dialogue that I never had with my father before. And I don't know how many times I've heard this, dozens and dozens and dozens of times. So I'm very proud of that and very moved by that, that was able to happen.
That was awesome, Lorraine. We also had Larry on TWIM a while back. He's terrific. I want to get him back on Marvel's Pull List or another show just because dude has so many stories just about – he's lived so much life but also did so much cool stuff at Marvel. James, Larry worked on Wolverine when we were kids and
that's
like
amazing.
He helped
– I thought I recognized the name.
Mm-hmm. He helped do a lot of cool stuff with Wolverine's backstory and Age of Apocalypse stuff. And so like, nice. Yeah, Larry's probably got a lot of stories that you loved when you were growing up too.
I'll have to check back into that because every time I do this show, I learn something new and I'm going on Google and going down a rabbit hole. So I thank you. My other question is, listen, I love you guys and you guys are my heroes, even though I'm the old man of the crew. My question to you is, Lorraine, when do you sleep?
Sleep is overrated and for babies.
Because I mean, you are all your shows are fantastic, but you work so much, ladies and gentlemen. You need to, if you're out there listening right now, I need you to stop whatever you're doing, unless you're driving, and give applause to Lorraine Sink. The woman is amazing.
I will take all of that and a bag of chips. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Yeah.
You know what? It's easy to work a lot when you love what you do.
That's very true. It's not work
well
if you
said.
Love it.
Where can folks check out Marvel's Declassified, Lorraine?
You can listen to Marvel's Declassified. It's available on the SiriusXM app and desktop player. Go check it out. I really think you'll enjoy it. And if you're not listening to This Week in Marvel already on the SiriusXM app, you should do that too.
Yeah. Just that conversation just now like had me thinking about when we did our 80th anniversary stuff in 2019 and how many war comics I read during that time period. Because when we were putting them out after World War II, a ton of like 50s, like we were putting out like Warfront, you know, Battle. Mm-hmm. Like I think there was one just called Battle with an exclamation point. There's so many books that we were putting out. Like that was so big. So this episode of Marvel's Declassified, definitely check it out. And then you can go on Marvel Unlimited and read tons of comics to supplement it.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're on Marvel Unlimited, another story you should most definitely read is a little book I like to call Brute Force because it's called Brute Force.
Yes.
It is honestly
I got
so
drug into
bananas.
That because of you, dang it.
I know. Did you read it, James? What did you think?
I read the first couple issues. I was like, because you said, it's a wild ride, just go. And I was like, what is happening? It was great. Thanks, man.
Hell yeah. Brute Force is this wonderful, weird comic from, you know, about almost 30 years ago. And our interview this week is with Paul Scheer, who is director of an episode of Marvel's 616 documentary series on Disney Plus called Lost and Found. And we talk to Paul about Brute Force and how they factor into his episode of Marvel 616, like putting together that episode. And just we talked to Paul about his Marvel fandom. And I mean, like, he's great. He's just terrific. And there's cameos in that episode from a bunch of Marvel creators and lots of really neat details that even I didn't know about Brute Force.
Also, our boss of LaRue, Steve Wacker, is in it. And oh my God, his scene makes me laugh a lot, to be honest.
He hams it up in all the best ways.
Definitely.
Steve Wacker, born for the screen. And you'll find out if you watch that episode of Marvel 616, which you could do after you listen to our interview with Paul Scheer. Paul Scheer, welcome back to This Week in Marvel. How are you?
I am great. I am, look, for most people, I don't know how everybody else is, but I've been quarantining. I've been home a lot, which means I've got to watch a lot of TV, read a lot of comic books. I mean, this is really a dream come true. You know, as long as I don't leave my house, everything is kind of perfect.
I know. I also feel like this is the time to thrive if you're an introvert and you like movies and comic books. It's a good time. Also, it seems like you've been cruising through space recently.
Oh, yeah. Well, you are referencing my amazing Zoom background, which I had to beg and plead Disney Plus to give me. It is a video Mandalorian background. I am on the Mandalorian ship and Baby Yoda's there drinking out of some sort of cup of something, a cup of soup. Not eggs. I don't want to get into that debate. He's not eating eggs.
I watched the episode in question.
Yep.
Everyone loves an omelet.
you guys are talking about all the stuff you're doing during quarantine. I have a baby, so like all the expectations and like hope of like, I'm going to read a book. I haven't read a book in
forever. Yeah, no. Well, Ryan, I mean, I have a 4 and 6 year old. I'm not really living that much of a free life. I'm up at 6 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
I'm cramming it in. I mean, but I am enjoying the fact that I don't have to commute. And every now and then when my kids are asleep and my dog has walked, I can, you know, play some PlayStation or watch a movie or read a book. I mean, it's perfect.
And you've adopted a third child, Baby Yoda.
I have adopted a third child. By the way, we actually adopted another child. So I have fourth. I have a fourth one, which is a dog. We adopted a dog during this quarantine, a 90-pound bulldog, a rescue bulldog. And it was, so that's been a lot of fun. So my life is full. My life is full, even though I'm coming to you from a closet with a green screen. That's, that's what I wanted to say to you.
We're all living that bunker life. I have to know, though, I am a connoisseur of dog names. I am obsessed with getting a second dog, which is a really long conversation my husband and I have been having. What is your dog's name?
Okay, so just so you know, like I said, I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and we all had to agree on the name. I will tell you the name that I fought hard against. Yoda. Did not want my dog named Yoda. I felt like that would be deflected back on me, like I forced this. I did not force it. He doesn't look like a Yoda. He wasn't going to be Yoda. So we ended up with Sergeant Meatball. Sergeant Meatball is the name.
That's a great
for
name.
Our dog. So he is he's a great dog, really lovely, super cuddly, big old guy.
Give every dog a title. They deserve it.
I feel like he needed that title. Like, we were going to call him Sergeant, and we also liked Meatball. And then my friend Amy Nicholson said, what about Sergeant Meatball? I said, Amy, you're a goddamn genius.
Brilliant.
And we jumped on it.
So you've been on the show before, but just in case any of our listeners have not heard you before on here, we want to know, what is your Marvel origin story? How'd you become a Marvel fan? How'd you learn about the characters? What was it for you?
You know, my Marvel origin story probably starts off like most people, which is I found Marvel comic books because they were the thing that you could get at like the supermarket. Like, I feel like there was like a section of like, and they weren't new comic books. It was like a Spider-Man collection. It was, you know, I remember it so vividly. There was a Spider-Man with Green Goblin on the cover. That's what I got. I was so excited to go there and get that. And I had that tattered up cover with me for a long time. And then, you know, as I was talking to somebody about it, they're like, really? That was your first one? And then they made me remember my actual first one were the Star Wars comic books. I still have them, the big Marvel Star Wars books. And then that was a very big in for me. I had like the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, you know, Marvel time book. But for me, I was kind of comic adjacent. I loved all the things about comics, but I didn't really get into them until about high school. And then I got in on the X-Men. Like, the X-Men was really big. That was like the Chris Claremont times. Loved reading those books. But then I had no one to talk to about it. The internet wasn't really a thing at all. I mean, it wasn't even like AOL. And I was like waiting for 10 minutes to download like a Beverly Hills Cop 3 poster, a really crappy one at best. So I kind of shied away from it. There was a comic book shop near my house, but it was always kind of empty. And I just kind of put those things away. And then when I got to college, my friend introduced me to Astro City. And I loved Astro City. I was like, this is amazing. And then that kind of opened me up to all these writers that I still love now. Like, that's when I kind of found Ed Brubaker and so many people that I just kind of got invested in and involved in. And then that kind of grew. And so I would say I'm a much more of a late bloomer. Yeah, because that's when I started to meet more people who read comic books. I was out of my little small world and just got to go to places and talk to more people.
Do you have like an all-time favorite character? Who do you most associate with?
You know, that's a good question. I'll be honest and say I started with the X-Men and I was like, oh, I love them. And I really like this Hickman run a lot. Like, I thought it was great and really, really good. But they're not my I don't know. I like the side characters a lot. Like, I want to see more of like the Damage Control. I want to see more of like Mockingbird. I want to see like the characters that don't get that much play. Like, I love Fraction's Hawkeye run. Like, I kind of feel like the cooler stuff is in these characters that we don't have this giant expectation for. But then conversely, I love Jason Aaron's run on Thor. I was like, wow, like this, I never liked this character. Or I never was brought into this character in a way besides like bigger books like Avengers and things like that. And I was so brought into that world. And, you know, and I feel like, I don't know if I feel like, oh, these are like, I guess Spider-Man, because everyone's a Spider-Man, but that's a boring one to say. You know, I want to kind of reach out and kind of find different ones. Yeah.
I have an actual relevant question, but I was just thinking, you're from Long Island, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm from Long Island too. When I start to ask people about their Marvel origin stories, I think of going to comic shops and various places on Long Island when I was a kid. Did you ever go to Shopper's Village in Hempstead?
Ooh, Shopper's Village. No, I've never been to Shopper's Village.
It was like a dirt mall. It was great. But okay. I bought so many great like 80s and 90s comics there. Like, anytime we get into a conversation about those memories, it's like it floods back, like the smell of pickles from the pickle stand and the weird like buying random issues of What If and stuff like that.
I love that the pickle stand was so close. By the way, What If, that was a great like entry point book, because I always found those to be really funny. I mean, you know, maybe it was just my lack of knowledge. And again, not having that kind of community around me when I first started reading books, like kind of finding the books that were funny or had a sense of humor. I don't know. I feel like there's an assured nature to all of them. They can feel like they can be all things, dramatic and comedic. And, you know, they really capture something that I feel, again, I wasn't totally open to as a kid. I felt like I'm reading comic books. They're serious. Like, I, you know, not to mention the other player in the game, but like Death of Superman was a very big thing when I was growing up, in the Death of Robin. It just felt like, okay, this is what we do serious. And I read a lot of Punisher, you know, Punisher War Journal, and you know, those are darker books, you know, they're great, I like them a lot, the covers were amazing, but they were like not like, ooh, can't wait to see what happens next week on Punisher War Journal, you know?
Yeah, I find that interesting. You bring up Punisher because of work you've done for us, finding a way to actually bring those things together, like the darker side character, kind of side character, and also your career being, you know, in comedy and bringing humor to stories, which is really cool. What is the effect of the stories you like to read have on the stories you want to tell when you're, say, writing a comic?
I always am a big believer that the least amount of expectation is the best for an audience, right? Because, you know, when you come into something, and now I know this a little bit too, like I came in to Cosmic Ghostwriter after Donnie had written it, and it kind of exploded in this way where everyone's like this, and they all had their own ideas of where it would go, which is great and fine. And, you know, I think for us, for our first two books, there was a dealing of like, how we had to deal with the editors and what they wanted it to be and what we wanted it to be and then what the audience wanted it to be. And I think by episode or issue 3, everybody kind of got on the same page. But it's kind of a tough thing to enter in with a preconceived notion. So for me, I'm always trying to look a little bit left of center. What is something that hasn't been done? What is something where we aren't really expecting that much from it? And I think when you live in that area, you can have a lot more fun. There's no baggage that you're bringing in. And right now we live in a culture of baggage. You know, you can't do a reboot or a remake without, well, this is destroying the original one, or I didn't like this, or that is different. We're not looking at things as unique anymore. We're looking at things through the lens of what I originally liked from the first. And that's unfair to the project too. So for me, I'm much more attracted to that. Like, what can I do? What can I revamp? What's weird? And how can we like ground it and make it awesome? Because I go back to, sorry, it's a very long answer, but Guardians of the Galaxy is being an amazing example of this. Like, for most people, and I would argue, and you two are way more versed in comics than I am, but Guardians of the Galaxy, for America, they don't know what that is, right? And as much as, you know, Iron Man is like the face of the MCU, it was not the face of the comic book industry, right? You know, so things can kind of happen in different ways, but I think that like James Gunn did an amazing job at like taking these characters where there were no preconceived notions, there was no knowledge of it. I think that Jon Favreau did that with Iron Man. Like, I don't know this much about it. Like, if he did Spider-Man, I think it would have been not well received, but you have more leeway. Like, we now associate so heavily Robert Downey Jr. with Iron Man. So you could very hard to read Iron Man and not see him. Or, you know, the same way like Sam Jackson took over Nick Fury, although Nick Fury, I think, has a more interesting character before Sam Jackson. I mean, combined, I'm just saying. But like, I just think that there are these things that you can take and bring people with you. And, you know, where every time you do another big movie, like, well, there's so much more expectation to a bigger character that everyone understands.
This feels like a really perfect segue to talk about your episode of Marvel 616.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of walked it in there by accident.
No, that's wonderful because you definitely deal with characters on the fringe, we'll say. They don't have as much lore around them. How did this all come about?
A long time ago, I was working on another project with these producers who had made Chess Table, the supper club. And they said, hey, we're working with some people at Marvel on a new documentary series. And the one cool thing about it is it doesn't have to do anything with the movies. It's only comic books. We know that you write books and we know that you know, are in this world a little bit. Would you like to do a documentary? And I was like, oh my God, yeah, absolutely. And what do you want me to do it on? And they're like, anything you want. And it was a giant kind of pool. And I sat down and came up with a bunch of ideas. And I think I came back to this idea of what are the characters that brought you in? What are these things that we remember as kids that not everybody else remembers? Because when we started reading these books, there are these weird characters that we connected to but never really took off. But because they were our only access point, we remember them more fondly, right? And that was the basis of it. Like, what are the weird characters that we all remember that you'd be sitting around in a bar or at a restaurant going like, remember there was a character, like he had like mongoose blood and then he was like, he was all yellow. Oh yeah, the wizard, right? Yeah, the wizard, right? Like, you know, like that kind of conversation. So that was the impetus for it, like kind of exposing and shining a light on this amazing world of Marvel that is not touched. You know, I didn't want to talk about Ms. Marvel. I didn't want to talk about Hawkeye. I didn't want to talk about anybody that you might recognize. So that was the original intent. And then quickly the joke was like, for me was, well, you know, to be anyone in Hollywood, you have to associate yourself with a Marvel property. So I do need to find one for myself. So that became the kind of premise of the documentary. Like, I need to find my Marvel character because all the good ones or all the most popular ones are taken. And then there's a line behind that are taken. They haven't even seen them yet. So what could I find? And that was kind of how I got into it.
There's a great montage-y sequence where you chat with some Marvel Comics creators to sort of brainstorm this concept that you're talking about. I want to get into that, but when you started to talk about that, it made me think of characters, like the things in my own head, the characters that I like. Oh man, I really wish Marvel would do Milk and Cookies comics again.
Oh,
Milk and
Cookies. Yeah.
From What the? And like, no one cares about those characters but me. And like,
well, what was the Alfred E. Newman one that they had too? Didn't they have like a
Forbushman?
Was it Forbushman? Okay. Or was it something else? Yeah, there's a bunch of weird ones. Yeah.
Yeah, there's tons of those, which is so good. And then, man, when you started getting into some of the characters and just like your reactions and their reactions about some of these characters in the documentary, can you remember some of those that you guys talked about?
Absolutely. Like, you know what? Just because I know the documentary is coming out and I would like people to see it, I'm going to talk about some of the characters that didn't make it
yes.
in to the documentary that we talked about. Because, yes, we sit down and we talk to, you know, people that you might know, like Jerry Duggan and Donnie Cates and Reggie Hudlin, you know, people who have put a very defined stamp on Marvel. Like, what do they like? And, you know, it was fun to come up against, like, Eminem teaming up with the Punisher. Did, you know, I don't know how many people remember that.
I was at Marvel for that.
All right. So, yeah, so there you go. You got some of that. Then it was, like, Billy Ray Cyrus, time-traveling knight, but also Billy Ray Cyrus.
That had to be from Steve Wacker, right?
That was actually, that was something that I was obsessed with because I kind of found it. And I was like, I need to do it. And Steve actually had the book.
Oh, of course he does.
Which is amazing. Then the ones that I really got into was, there's a character called Asbestos Lady.
Yeah.
Who was in an accident. She was, you know, made of asbestos. Liked her. A hell cow, a vampire cow. There's a rash of, and I really wanted to do a whole like episode on this, like the cool 80s characters or the 90s characters. Like there was a rash of like, these are what Marvel creators thought like the cool kids, where they all kind of look like Johnny Bravo a little bit. You know, they all had like, they all had like this kind of hair and sunglasses. And yeah, so that was like really fun there. And, you know, in the documentary, we talk about one that I feel like has gotten so much love whenever I bring it up is US One, which is US One is a trucker. Parents died in a truck accident. He gets a CB radio implanted in his head. And all of a sudden by issue 8, they're in outer space. And we talk a little bit about it, but there's a whole episode to be done about Transformers. I mean, the way that what Marvel Comics did for Transformers is unbelievable. Like, I mean, they created everything.
Those comics are great.
They're
too.
Great. Yeah, really, really well done.
Oh, man. From my early days, I really remember when I first started working at Marvel, we had Citrus Man, whose head was a Florida orange.
Oh, and my gosh. I love that.
We had a life-size standee of him, and I'll never forget it. It haunts my dreams. It's truly excellent. But you did finally land on Brute Force.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone unfamiliar with the glory that is Brute Force, could you please explain
it
for us?
Absolutely. So Brute Force is an interesting bunch of characters. They're animals who've been tested on who become sentient, and then they become these eco-warriors, taking down these corporations who are destroying the rainforests and polluting the air. So it was a really interesting story, and this is kind of where the documentary goes. Like the first quarter of it is really just kind of having fun in the world of Marvel, and then we really do a deep dive into Brute Force and how it came to be. And Brute Force was created by a freelance toy designer who right now is the number one dog toy designer in the world. He had this idea. He thought this idea of like, truthfully, like it was not a, you know, when I say toy designer, you think, oh, he was just trying to make money. He truthfully believed that animals and machines might merge. And we was drawing these ideas and thought like, oh my gosh, well, if animals and machines merge, like, well, first of all, that toy would be amazing. And then we got to tell that story. So he kind of reversed engineered what we talked about with Transformers. Transformers, there was a toy. They did the comics to help sell the toy. And now what he decided was, let's do a comic and then make a toy. Unfortunately, Brute Force only had about 8 issues. So it did not translate as well as we thought.
Now I'm suddenly so concerned that he's turning all those dogs into cyborgs.
He might be, but they're better for it.
That guy's name is Charles Viola.
Yes.
You'll see him in the documentary when you watch it. Also, you know, we mentioned the Transformers comics, and the first series was written by Simon Furman, who's like the longest writer on Transformers comics in the US and UK. Those UK comics for Transformers, again, can't stress enough. Those are dope.
Really cool. I mean, he was amazing. Talk to Simon Furman. You know, it was in London. You know, we did it over Skype. It was so great to kind of hear about that. And again, what I kind of found in this documentary was, oh, I want to make like 10 more documentaries about all this sort of stuff, because each one of them has really a rich and full story that is so, you know, I think people are just doing their job, but they did create a lasting impression. You know, I think that's really the truth of the idea of like what all these documentaries are. My documentary is a part of the series 616, and there's 8 of them, and each one is completely different, but it all exists within the world of Marvel books with a slight veering of the course. Like we go to Japan in one episode and do a whole episode about Japanese Spider-Man, which is amazing. And that's all incredibly, it's all subtitled. You go to Spain to see these artists in Spain. One of my artists who did one of my books, Salva Espen.
Espen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Amazing guy who was always showing me like the culture of comics in Spain was so giant. And, you know, there's an episode about the women of Marvel and these women that were really right there, but don't get the credit as much as they should. And the creation that they made and the characters that they kind of created and Marvel high school plays. So each one of them, cosplay is a really beautiful episode. So you'll laugh, you'll cry. And I'm selling the series because I actually like legitimately love it. It's a really fun series. And I think if you like and know anything about Marvel, you're going to love it. And if you don't know, it's very much an entry point show as well.
Yeah, Lorraine and I were texting the other day because I was watching your episode. We're like legitimately laughing out loud. And at one point, you brought in someone who's a dear friend to all of us, Jesse Falcon.
Yes.
Who, longtime Marvelite. He's worked at Toy Biz and Marvel and Disney and creates pretty much all the cool toys anyone who loves Marvel toys has ever played with. But there was a line that he said that made me laugh so hard. And like, I had to text him and he was just so excited to be a part of it. Man, I freaking love the episode.
This means the world to me. It was one of the most fun things to do. And Jesse Falcon is one of my dearest friends because we did improv and comedy together in New York, and he lives down the block from me now. I knew that Jesse on camera would be really fun. I don't want to reveal why I bring him in, but Jesse's knowledge of toys is amazing, and getting to go into his house where he has like this, basically this garage that's kind of converted into his Marvel room. I mean, from the props and the toys, it's amazing. Like the first time I ever saw Hulk hands were when Jesse Falcon brought them to a UCB, that's Upright Citizens Brigade, backstage. And we had those hands ages ago. They were the best, you know, one of the best toys of all time.
First of all, Jesse smolders like no one has ever smoldered in a like cut to shot of with the lower third.
Yeah.
I didn't know Jesse could do that, but he really, really brought like his best model face, and I appreciated it thoroughly. But also you get to talk to a lot of amazing people, like people that I just love so much from the comedy community. I don't want to spoil too much, but you know, giving them their chance to look over brute force for acting.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple names because it's like John Hamm is in it, Nicole Byer is in it, Jack McBrayer, a bunch of fun faces. And yeah, I'm still trying to like keep a little bit of it, like a little bit of a surprise. So many fun people. It was really fun because, again, I'm kind of just high on the Marvel experience. They really let me go and make what I wanted to make. And they had a couple of parameters of what I could and could not do and say and not say. But for the most part, you know, this comic book world of Marvel is incredibly open. And that's really kind of special. Like, you know, as Marvel becomes, you know, synonymous with like Mickey Mouse in a way, to be able to still have fun in this arena and not be so nervous about what we have. Like, I kind of consider it like there's a bunch of Raiders of the Lost Ark arcs like in, you know, in storage, and it's kind of have to open up the crates and see what's in there. And it's really fun that they let us do that as much as we could.
You know, speaking of these crates that are off on the, you know, on the shelves, I've got a couple suggestions for additional ones. Maybe kick them around. One that, I don't know, maybe somebody brought it up to you. It's a little title called Power Pachyderms.
Oh my gosh. So this is different than Power Pack.
Different than Power Pack, but this is Power Pachyderms. Circus elephants exposed to a nuclear bomb give birth to super-powered pachyderms.
Oh my goodness.
Electrolux mammoth Trunklops and Rumbo.
Wow, this seems like somebody like brute force. They're like, you know what, let's take out all the other animals and just make it all about the elephants. I am in. Power Pachyderms, let's go. I mean, look, my original idea, I don't know what will happen because God knows what the powers that be, but you know, I want to, you know, at the end of this episode, I kind of rebirth Brute Force as an animated show. I want to create like a Saturday morning cartoon show vibe at Disney Plus and just be able to do all these weird ones. You know, they're never going to make, you know, Kevin Feige can let me have Power Pachyderms, right? Come on.
From your lips to his ears, please, please, please. There's more too. There's like I start thinking about like the weird corners of the Marvel universe. There's Steel Town Rockers.
Oh, there's so many.
Which is like the story of a bunch of kids trying to make a band. And it's just so weird. Like, what were we doing to do this book in like the early 1980s? And to the point where when people become fans of these things, to your point earlier, and like you glom onto these things and you take them with you as you grow older. One of our friends who works in the like, you know, the park side of things, Brian Crosby, he and his team put up a Steel Town Rockers flyer in Disney California Adventure in the Marvel area, like this really obscure thing. And they were able to make that reference. It's so cool.
That is the kind of the beauty of the Disney Marvel merging, because I think that like as far as theme parks are concerned, or at least what I can remember of theme parks, they really can embed so much little detail. And you know, with Disney World, with the hidden Mickeys, like the idea that Marvel and what this land will become and what it will represent and all the little things. Like, I understand that, like, if you go to all the different Marvel rides, they all kind of connect. There's pieces that connect, you know, Guardians in California to Iron Man's ride in Hong Kong. Like, they're all there. They all are kind of driving a little bit of a narrative, which I love.
Oh, yeah. You're such a huge Star Wars fan. I know that you did a special piece with the Star Wars show.
Yes, I did.
Did you freak out when you got to see the whole land?
Hell yeah. I mean, look, I'm a huge, huge Disney fan. And then to get to experience a new park was just absolutely amazing to me, or a new, you know, land. So I got to go to that land. That was amazing. But I will say, when I got to ride Rise of the Resistance, the brand new ride, the big monster ride, that hands down is one of the best experiences I've ever had on a ride. It is unbelievable. It is never to be met yet by anything else. It's phenomenal.
So then, remember, you're on a Marvel podcast.
Yes.
If you had to choose a fandom, Star Wars and Marvel are their arm wrestling.
Oh, it's Marvel. It's,
for
it's
your
Marvel.
Love.
It's Marvel hands down, because here's the idea. And I know I'm on a Marvel podcast, but the idea is that I feel like there is more. There's an 80-year history to Marvel, right? And there's, what, 8,000 characters, or, you know, some insane number there. If I'm on a desert island, you know, I'm all alone, I want to be surrounded by Marvel movies, Marvel books, Marvel board games. Like, there's a lot with Star Wars, but we're oftentimes running around the same circles. So I'm very excited to embrace something like Power Pachyderms. You know, when I get to that, I'm going to feel really good about myself. I'm not going to feel like, okay, this is how, who taught Snoke? This is the guy who taught, okay, sure, this is Snoke, okay, sure. I like the world. The world is of Marvel is so much bigger.
Well, since you have your third adopted child, maybe take in a fourth or fifth, yeah. I guess, if you count your dog. You can get a Power Pachyderm for your house, or maybe a Brute Force
I would
character,
love it.
Maybe Soar. Oh my God, somebody is listening to this and they make custom toys. And I'm telling you, this is your moment, dude.
Get on
you're
it.
You're going to make one
Get
of those.
On it.
And then you're going to tweet them to us. You're going to tag all of us, and we're going to make
we
this
We will
a thing.
Buy them, and we will tell people about it.
Heck yeah. Speaking of telling people about things, can you tell us where our fans can find you on all your very many projects?
Yes. I mean, look, I'm pretty much available to most people on any form of social media. Like, just search for Paul Scheer. In this quarantine time, I've been actually having a lot of fun on Twitch. So I've been doing comedy shows there and kind of just doing a bunch of different really, I don't know, fun stuff, or at least fun for me. It's been great to be over there. So I'm just Paul Scheer on Twitch. But I'm also, I have my podcast, How Did This Get Made, and Unspooled. And yeah, I mean, you know, pop up in different stuff. Black Monday season 3 will come back soon. Black Monday season 2 just finished. So we got stuff going on.
Thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully,
thank you.
When you get your Brute Force dreams fully realized, come back and we'll talk about that process.
I will.
I love it.
Yay.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you so much, everybody. That was lovely.
All right. Once again, thanks again to Paul Scheer for coming on the show. You can check him out on Marvel 616 on Disney Plus, the episode Lost and Found. And of course, his like 800 projects and podcasts. He's trying to rival the two of you, James and Lorraine, of who can work the most. So I hope the battle ends with one of you winning, but I just don't know.
I'm rooting for Lorraine.
I'm rooting for James.
Oh, you guys. All right, let's roll on. We're going to get into our community section in a second, but our question of the week for everybody to answer for next week is, because we know Marvel Studios WandaVision is on its way next week, what are your hype levels for Marvel Studios WandaVision? You can give it a numerical value. You can give it a word. You can do, like, what is your hype level? I think the three of us are pretty hyped.
My hype level is Omega.
Wow. You got to say it with that, like, Omega.
Yeah, that's the proper pronunciation. It's a tonal language. Thank you.
Yeah, my hype levels are dishes spinning around a kitchen via magic. Super like.
Wow. My hype level is just someone, the whole crowd doing the wave at WrestleMania.
Ooh.
Ooh, I like that.
That's a lot. Dear listeners, let us know your hype levels for Marvel Studios WandaVision. You can tweet your answers using hashtag This Week in Marvel, email them to twimpodcast@marvel.com, or send a message to our Facebook page at facebook.com/This Week in Marvel. And of course, please make sure to let us know if the message is okay to read. You can just type okay to read in the tweet, the email, or the Facebook post, and that'll help us a ton.
Yeah. Last week we asked you guys, who's your favorite D-list Marvel character in the spirit of brute force? So let's hear some answers. James, why don't you kick us off?
Marvel Man at Spider-Boy 3. My fave D-list character is hands down Hellcow, the vampire cow. She's just so weird and cool, like an immortal cow that can teleport and fly. How epic is that? Guys, explain this to me. I must find out this character now.
She is utterly immortal.
She sounds very moving.
This is honestly awesome. She's a vampire cat. She got bit by a vampire. Now she's a vampire cow.
Yeah.
Bessie.
That's awesome.
She's got a little cape. She's got, you know, she just does her thing.
Also, she's naked. She's like just being a cow. With a cape on. Yeah. And vampire teeth. I love her.
Her name is Bessie, so it is just a classic cow name.
I believe like a Howard the Duck story or mm-hmm. Man-Thing story was where she first showed up and then has been around for since the 70s and showed up in some Deadpool stuff and bonkers. Hellcow is bonkers.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yes. That is a great pick, Marvel Man. Thank you for that one.
Oh, that is so good. That is so good. Thank you guys. My life is made now.
We've got another answer here from David Peppa at Peppa David saying, my favorite D-list character is Moon Knight. His story, costume, and abilities are so cool, and I can't wait to see him in the upcoming Disney Plus series. I argue,
is he D-list?
Yeah, can
Ryan's going to arm wrestle you for this one.
I was about to say, D-list? Really?
I would go, at worst, C plus list, but I would say B list. I mean, Moon Knight has had around 200 comics published of a solo Moon Knight series over the last, 45 years or so.
I will say it doesn't matter where he started because he's about to be A-list, baby.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
You know? Next up, we've got the Tech Lord at Lex Pendragon. Marvel Tales audio plays are awesome. Awesome. Pure awesome. Thank you. Four more. That's right. They are talking about the one and only Kate Bishop Marvel Tales story that we had in our episode last week. If you didn't get a chance to listen to it, definitely go check it out. It's a great little sweet story. All audio, all the time, baby.
Well, there's actually, you could also, I believe, read the script from it on Marvel.com, and there's a great piece of art that was created to go with it, which is really, really cool. All Hawkeye, all the time. And true, the best Hawkeye has been.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Next, we have Karis Pollard at Karis Pollard. Pretty late on this, but in answer to This Week in Marvel's question of what I'm looking forward to in 2021, I think it's the same answer as I gave last year. I'm looking forward to Falcon and the Winter Soldier, though currently super hyped for WandaVision 2. Seriously, getting back to the new film and TV content will be amazing. I love my comics, but I've missed the MCU so badly in 2020. And she has a second tweet. And so my This Week in Marvel pick goes to The Avengers by Jason Aaron, Javier Guerron, and David Kiro. All the Avengers books look great, and this is no exception. The Phoenix Fire is everywhere, but balanced out well. The Phoenix Cap design is perfect. The way the story unfolds just works. Thank you for that.
Great picks, as always. Karis always throwing out her favorite comics that she reads every week, which is awesome. And all right, we already got your hype levels. You're super hyped for Marvel Studios WandaVision, which we like. Yeah, I'm so excited for everyone to get, like us included, but everyone to get more MCU this year. And we're getting a lot.
Oh my gosh. It's bucket nuts.
The What If series, though, I won't lie.
The What If series is like, that was, when I was a kid, that was my thing. Mm-hmm. I would get the What If comics and just go nuts. So the fact that they're doing it, especially as an animated series, the hypeness level
it's
is
going to be the best.
Crazy. Like this yay area hyphy moment. For me.
Well said. Me too. We got a couple emails in here, which I definitely want to read. This one is from Bilal Alayan saying, "Hi, Lorraine, Ryan, and James. It felt like years ago, but our greatest Marvel moment of 2020 was seeing you guys and the rest of the Marvel crew at C2E2 back in February. Oh my God. My daughter and I had a blast. Getting to meet and chat with the creators was fantastic. Seeing the Dawn of X team was great, and hearing the announcement for Ten of Swords was an added bonus. We are Marvel fans because of the books, and this year was no exception. Immortal Hulk, Daredevil, the X-Men line, and many other books were great, and we look forward to every issue. But we want to give love to our favorite book of 2020, Strange Academy. The series has been nothing but fun, introducing so many new characters. Scotty Young was able to provide colorful backstories to each of them, along with Humberto Ramos' art. The series has been nothing but outstanding. Issue number 4 was our favorite of the run. The students playing interdimensional tag and going from one world to another and getting into mischief was so entertaining to read. I want to wish you all a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Thank you, Bilal and Layan, a lion. P.S. Lorraine, my daughter loves Marvel Powers of a Girl. I believe she has read it cover to cover at least 6 times this year."
This makes me so happy. I remember meeting them at C2E2. My favorite picture from C2E2 was meeting, I believe it's Layan, the little one, and she was dressed up as Captain Marvel, and we were just sitting on the stage. We were both sitting there on our knees talking, and I signed her book, and it was just, I mean, I love meeting anybody who wants to meet me at cons. Honestly, love it, 100, you know? But when a little girl comes up to me in costume and wants to talk to me about superheroes, I'm like, clear my schedule. I do not care about anything else anymore. This is my jam.
Yep. It's terrific. One of our listeners sent me a picture. They bought Powers of a Girl and was giving it to his 13-year-old daughter to read this year. So it's very exciting.
That's the best.
You're helping the youth of today, Lorraine.
You're a role model, girl. You're a role model.
I'm just trying to let girls live, you know?
Hey, we need that, so thank you.
I went to Comic-Con when I was like 10 or 11. I went to my first one, and I just remember being in a sea of men, and that was fine. They were all very nice. People let me run around, and it was cool. But like, this is a neat world where there are grown-up girls.
Ladies, did you hear that? That right there is a story. That's a starter from the bottom, now we hear. This is a fan who stepped into Comic-Con, and now where is she? On the stage at Comic-Con. You're reading her books. God, I love this world. This is so dope.
Golden well done, girls girl. All day. We got an email here. Let's get into it. "Hello, Twim hosts. My name is William, a fellow Marvelite listener, viewer, and comic book reader from Port St. Lucie, Florida. I'm a big fan of your work on Earth's Mightiest Show, and shout out to Langston. We need him on Twim as a future guest co-host. What am I looking forward to first for Marvel in 2021 is WandaVision, which is coming in 3 weeks. Sooner now. As I'm writing this email, next, I'm looking forward to all things X-Men, the Chris Claremont anniversary special comic, and his Marvel-made Paragon collection for Days of Future Past, plus his involvement in X-Men Legends. Not to forget the big plans for Reign of X. What a merry mutated Triple D!
Triple D!
I'm also excited for Avengers Campus, which is not so far away. But last but not least, the exciting announcement that Marvel Studios is doing a musical performance event for the Bilibili New Year's Gala on New Year's Eve for all of the Marvelites in China, previewing the upcoming MCU features in 2021. Wow, I didn't know that was happening. To end this letter, I have 3 big questions for you. Numero uno, which current Dawn/Reign of X book writer who has yet to appear on Twim or Pull-List do you wish to interview?
I'm trying to think.
I don't know who hasn't been on the show. That's the harder question.
I know we had Leah Williams on Marvel's Pull-List once, maybe twice. She's terrific. We got into a real intense, amazing discussion. Leah Williams, who's writing one of my favorite books right now in X-Factor. I think we haven't had Jonathan Hickman because Jonathan doesn't like to do a lot of press. He likes to let his work speak for him, which mm-hmm. It does. It soars. So Jonathan would be the one I would want to get to talk, but I don't know that I would get any straight answer out of him. I barely get a straight answer out of him when I talk to him in person anyway. I just love bringing Jerry Duggan back over and over again if I can.
Jerry is the best. And numero dos.
Who will you first interview for the upcoming WandaVision series? That's a spicy question because we've already talked to somebody.
Two somebodies.
Yeah, two somebodies.
For This Week in Marvel.
I'm not sure which one will come out first.
Yeah, I think some of our other sister shows or sibling shows, our gender-neutral partner shows here at the Marvel Podcast Network also have some interviews coming up for Marvel Studios' WandaVision. So I guess everybody should be subscribed to every single Marvel podcast.
Yeah, because you never know. Look, you'll always get new information. And you'll always get really amazing guests.
Yeah. Right. All right. And numero tres, or shall I say triple D, will you guys bring Guy Fieri as a future guest? We listeners are clamoring for the ultimate, hands down, triple D episode of This Week in Marvel. Yes.
Look, William, I forwarded this email to our talent guy who helps book us guests for the show. And I said, Patrick, can you please get us Guy Fieri? I want to talk to him. I want to share the triple D magic. I want an episode of the show that I can send to my in-laws and to my mom and be like, look at what I did. This is relevant to your interests as well as mine. That would be super fun. Look, Guy Fieri has done so much for people in 2020 during the pandemic.
Yes.
Dude is like, say what you will. Like, he's awesome. He does good work. Mm-hmm. He's fun. He's in on the joke. He is having a blast. He's living his best life. He is a triple D.
And honest to God, we'll work to get him on the show, but he is busy doing a ton of charity work. We'll give him some time to get back to us.
James, you've met everybody. Have you ever met Guy Fieri?
I've never met Guy Fieri. I would love to. I just want to sit in his car and go to all the cool barbecue places he goes to. That's what I want to do. I want to just be his partner on one of them episodes. That's what I want to do.
Yep.
I can't watch that show anymore unless I am physically eating at the time.
Because you get so hungry.
Because if I have not eaten, I will lose my mind. And if I have eaten, I will just eat another meal. So those are my rules. Anyways, closing out this email, thank you for continuing this show for all us listeners to enjoy as we head into a brand new promising year of Marvel content. Please stay safe and excelsior.
Thank you, William. R.
Thank you, William.
That was a terrific email. Yeah. What a good slate of emails and comments from everybody. Thank you again. That's it, you guys. We did our first big episode of 2021. How y'all feeling?
I'm feeling good. I think it's going to be a great year. I have to stay optimistic. So I think that we are starting from this episode on till 2022. It's going to just be amazing.
This episode of This Week in Marvel is produced by Alexis Williams, Zachary Goldberg, Persia Verlin, Lorraine Sink, and Ryan Panagos.
Our audio development manager is Brad Barton.
Jill Duboff is our director of audio.
And special thanks to 2020 for being over.
GTFO 2020!
That was awesome.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorraine.
And I'm James.
This is Marvel.
Your universe.